Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Happy Thursday afternoon, everybody. John Williams off today. John Hansen in here as instead on 720 WGN. Just 107 now in the afternoon. Turned out to be a gorgeous afternoon after some rain showers overnight. And we heard Steve Bertrand and Amy Guth talking about the wettest May in record. Man, gorgeous day out there today. See the boats on the river. Everyone looks happy, smiling, and looking pretty good today. Elif, you just took a big bite of a sandwich or something. Are you ready to talk yet? You good to go?
I am. I am so good to go.
Okay. Very good. Very good. I'm fired up today. I don't know if you could tell
you are,
the moment I walked in.
It's raring to go. You're projecting onto me?
Yeah. Am I firing you up too? I hope so.
You're firing me up.
Thanks, Elif. Lauren Lapka in traffic. I didn't get to talk to you much yesterday. How are you doing today?
I'm great. When the sun is shining, I am happy. Other day, I'm very tired if it's cloudy.
Right. The sun just obviously gives you that natural energy. And I'm glad you're here, Lauren, because I know you're a big White Sox fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I got some baseball topics to talk off on the front end, and then also I'm going to get to the Tim Anderson situation and the beaming yesterday, or maybe not, maybe an unintentional pitch, but the quick ejection by the home plate umpire. But Laura, I don't know if you saw the clips about with Albert Almora Jr.
Yeah,
of the Cubbies.
Awful.
I don't think I've ever had such, except for the Cubs winning the World Series, quite an emotional reaction as I had watching Albert Almora Jr. have the reaction that he had. So for those of you that don't know, he hit a foul ball into the stands, and as a player hitting that ball, if it's to your left or right-hand side, you've got the best view of where that ball is going. So he watched all the way, and as it struck a very young fan in the stands in Houston, he was overcome with emotion. You could even hear on the broadcast his voice coming through just saying, "Oh my God, oh my God." And he was overcome with emotion. It took obviously some time. Jason Hayward was on the on-deck circle, talked to him, same with Joe Maddon. They moved the game on, and Albert Almora Jr. wanted to stay in the game. People were wondering why the heck he stayed in that thing, but he wanted to. And then I lost it when they were showing the clips of him. I don't know if you saw this, Lauren, where he was hugging the security guard.
Oh, man, yeah. That's where it really kind of hit home, because he knew he sniped that thing. It looked bad. It looked really bad. And I think we could all kind of put ourselves in his shoes that he felt awful. You're playing the game. You don't intend to hurt anyone ever,
let alone a
small child.
Right.
That was hard to watch.
It was scary. And I saw pictures of the fan being carried away. And just so everyone knows, we don't have quite an update. All we know, I think, at least the last time I checked, was saying that there were reports that the young fan was conscious. And that had been rushed off to the hospital. And there were some positive feelings about it in terms of maybe not as life-threatening. But with these sorts of injuries, especially if you're struck anywhere near the head, some of these things take some extra examination to look at. So 312-91-7200, I do not understand why every Major League Baseball team today is not taking netting all the way from home plate, past the dugouts where it was mandated that they go now, thank goodness, and go all the way to the foul pole. I have no idea why that doesn't happen.
Meanwhile, though, I just got word from Eric that, good news, she's going to make a full recovery.
Wonderful.
Oh, great news.
No matter what, that's the best possible news. Great. But let's not now lose sight of this important issue. This is what happens. We have fans struck by balls. In fact, last year, a Dodgers fan, 79-year-old grandmother, was hit by a ball, died a couple days later due to some internal bleeding. So let's not lose sight of this now. I do not understand. This should not be an issue that we wait for 2020 for the next year's baseball season to take care of. They have people that make these nets. I can't imagine they're that hard to string up. And let's take him to the foul pole. You already have an anchor in left and right field, a giant pole that's there to determine fair or foul balls. Why not extend the netting all the way down? It makes no sense to me how you can do that. Let's go to the phone lines. I imagine some folks are going to have some thoughts. Mel, you're on the line. You're on WGN.
Good afternoon. In 2009, my wife and my family and I were at the White Sox, and my 5-year-old grandson was sitting in my wife's lap. And he got hit with a line drive, and if anybody thinks you can stop that, you're crazy.
Yes, no way.
You can't. But his face, he got a cracked eye socket, and he had bleeding on the brain. He spent 2 days in intensive care at Homer's Children's Hospital. And when we left White Sox Cellular Field, they gave him a baseball bat and a ball, and that was the last we heard from them. Because they do not pay the medical bills or anything else.
Right. Yeah, and, is he okay now?
Yes.
Okay, thank goodness.
He's a great baseball player.
Well, that's good. And, Mel, thanks for the call. Thank God he's
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
And we have another text, someone saying in 2010. Actually, the text just came in. That was my dad. He has the year wrong. It was 2010. So, Mel, get it right. It was 2010, not 2009. Just a scary sort of thing. 815 wonders, why don't we ban kids from certain seats? I've taken my kids to games for years, especially minor league games, where you have the opportunity to get good seats. Rule one, eyes on the game at all time. Rule two, dad is on the side closest to the batter and prepared to take one for the team. Rule three, don't forget rule one, which I already did, but eyes on the game at all times. Yeah, so the eyes on the game sort of situation. I know there's a lot of people out there that say part of this is why people get hit by foul balls is because they're not paying attention. First of all, when you're talking about a 5 or 6-year-old, they're more interested in the nachos or the ice cream or whatever's in front of them. I don't know if you've ever been to a game with a little kid, but, you know, they're not going to sit there. I love baseball. I'm a baseball purist and watch every pitch. Even I can barely sometimes pay attention to every single pitch of a baseball game. It's part of the relaxing pace of the game. You're meant to have conversation, to talk with people, to enjoy the pace of the game.
Not to mention, what did they say? That ball came flying over 90 miles per hour or something?
Yes. I mean, we see exit velocities from baseball players' bats of 110 miles an hour routinely. And baseball players with gloves aren't able to protect themselves from those plays sometime. How are you expecting young kids to do that? And if you start saying, oh, you got to police where kids sit, where they don't, you're just going to be adding so much to the mess that is trying to organize how people sit in games. And then other people say, you know, like one of their texters did and one of the callers did originally, but they dropped off the line, was that the parents should always be the one closest to the home plate so you can kind of watch what's going. Yeah, that could help. But when you're talking about a second and a half, if that, to react, it's nearly impossible. And I just, the 6-3-0 says the fan needs to take some responsibility. They make announcements, watch the game. When you're 5 or 6 years old, one, you're not listening to that announcement. Number two, you're as I said, paying attention to a bunch of other things. And no one can react that fast. They also added maybe 5-year-olds should be at home. No, we're trying to grow the game. All of these are workarounds to the easiest solution of all time, to add a little mesh net all the way down the line.
I agree with you 100%, but you know what I just thought of?
What?
I go to a lot of concerts, and sometimes they have warnings ahead of the show that say, if you have light sensitivity, mm-hmm. we have flashing lights throughout the show.
Right.
And basically they're saying you should leave if you have light sensitivity.
Okay.
And what would the solution be then?
There is no solution. Then, make then an announcement like, if you don't want to get hit by a foul ball, leave.
But do they lose the production value then to a concert if they can't use their lighting?
Yes, I think so.
So do you see how I'm trying to make
kind of. I see what you're driving at. That no, the solution could maybe, so you're saying that the experience
that
of going to a baseball game involves this intimacy with the players, this having a net kind of separates you from them. It takes away the idea of that someone can get a foul ball or a foul ball tossed into the stands by a player. Yeah, you lose a little of that, but it doesn't take away from the rest of the game. Honestly, I've been blessed to be able to every now and then get to sit in close seats, close proximity to the field. It's great. And you go, oh, the net's there. And you talk about it for, I don't know, a second, 2 seconds, and you forget about it. Who cares? It's so easy to do. 708, maybe you should pay attention to where you sit when you bring a kid or infant to the game. It's foul ball territory. Some people sit there for that very reason. Who wants to watch a game enclosed in a cage? It's not a cage. It's not that bad.
And those balls are going everywhere.
Yes.
They even go into the upper deck sometimes.
And fast, too, into the upper deck. But at least then you have a little bit more time. There's the distance.
Then you get the banks, the ones that hit off the top and fall back down. And people aren't aware of that because they're not looking backwards and up if they see it go all the way up.
Right. Let's go to the phone lines. Mira, you're on WGN. What are you thinking?
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, this is why it's called an accident. you know, to what Lauren had said earlier. I mean, nobody goes in as a player intending to hurt anybody.
Of course.
They're just doing their job. And clearly he was overcome with how horrible he felt and everything else. But number two, I do agree with you. I mean, the easy fix for the moment is just do the netting all the way around.
Yeah.
And you know what? It may keep a situation of, you know, fan interference at bay also, because your inclination is to reach out, you know, into the play to grab a ball.
Mira, you are speaking.
You become a 2-year-old, you know, at that point, because you want that ball.
I didn't even think about that, but I bet the Cubs fans out there wish that there had been a net in Game 6 of the 2003 NLCS.
I was just going to say that, and thank you, Lauren, for being a Sox fan. We need more of you.
Yeah.
Amen. There you go, Laura. Hey, Mira, thank you for the phone call. Yeah, I agree. Of course, it's an accident. Like, if there's no intention there, and accidents happen. You're never going to prevent all accidents in the world in a baseball game. I understand that. There is happenstance that happens. Things happen. But when the solution is this easy, this affordable, and has 0 to 0.1% negative outcome to it, it is a no-brainer. 630 says Kane County Cougars now has a full screen all the way down the line. It took 2 minutes to get used to. Nobody pays attention, and there are kids everywhere not paying attention. There's kids, there's adults not paying attention, but I'm even saying that these aren't mutually exclusive. You could also have put your phone in the garbage disposal 2 weeks before you go to a game. You could sit there, be intently watching every single pitch, and a line drive could still smack you in the forehead. Lauren, do you agree with that? I mean, that could happen. I mean, that,
yeah.
So
there's no stopping, you know, crazy scenarios.
Right.
There just isn't.
And this, people may have forgotten this, but when we talk about hockey, you go to the United Center, the Blackhawks now have netting all the way around, right? They don't have it right over the benches, I believe, but they have it certainly all around the back ends behind each of the goals. A 13-year-old Columbus Blue Jackets fan was killed in the upper deck by a hockey puck in 2002. They buried a 13-year-old girl before the NHL decided to put the nets in behind the goal. And does anyone even notice the nets at all? I'm sure that we had the same debate about this in 2002 when they put the nets up. Oh, yeah, I don't know. There's a net in the way. Who cares? You should never be burying a kid or an adult because of going to a game by an accident that is completely unavoidable. 708 says he was cheering with his sons. It happened so fast, he couldn't do anything. Exactly. 815 says, you're not trying to catch the ball. The parents need to block or cover the kids. Perfectly doable if the parent is paying attention. You try and do 95-mile-an-hour line drive, you have what? Half a second? Go watch the clip. See how long it takes from the ball to go off the bat to Albert Almora Jr. hunched over screaming, oh my God, because he probably thought he killed someone.
Yeah, it's just like a car accident. You don't always, not everyone responds with cat-like reflexes.
Yes.
I said a lot of times
too.
You're just in shock, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. 630 says, if you have a 4-year-old, buy seats that are not in the line of fire. Hey, look, if the solution was that hard, I'd agree with you. If there was like, look, there's no way to do this. You're taking your kids there, and they're going to be in the line of fire because there's simply nothing we can do about it. For whatever reason, let's say that was the situation here, then you're right. Then if there's literally nothing the league can do about it, okay, fine. Put them in some other seats. That's your right as a parent. That's your responsibility to keep your kids safe. Let's go somewhere else. But since there is a solution that is so easy and so cheap, I mean, even in Chicago, I'm sure there's like a Union Net guy who is going to, you know, pay a little bit. You're going to pay a lot to get the netting down. It's still going to be what? I mean, how much could a net be down the line? Honestly, I don't know. I have no idea. But it's got to be under a couple $1,000s to get the net down there. 847 says, I'm 50-50 on the issue. I love the chance of getting a ball, 36 years old, and I've only come close to it one time, but safety's important. Yeah, as a kid, I loved the idea of getting a ball, and that was great. And that's a fun part of the game, of course, especially as a kid. At 36, I don't know. I mean, I'm still excited. I just missed a home run ball a couple weeks ago. And yeah, of course you're excited. You want to try and catch that. But even that, to me, as a baseball lover, that was my first sport. I would get on that Addison bus and go with my grandma to 20 games a year whenever she could take me. It's part of who I am in my DNA is the baseball pure experience. And I don't care if they put a net there. Now, if you put in a net in the outfield, that's a whole other thing. But there you have so much reaction time. The ball has slowed down at that point. It is not a lethal weapon at that point. The most expensive seats behind the plate have nets. That's from the 847. People still buy them. Put up the nets. Amen. How hard is that? It's just a net. It doesn't restrict your view. Plus, they could collect all the balls that go into the net and drop them with parachutes at the next game, kind of like they do with the Lakeside Bank t-shirt toss. That's a good text, 224. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Beth. Beth, you're on WGN. Hello, Beth. Are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I am confused by why people would bring babies to the game.
Well, okay, let's. I don't know how old this fan was, and I've seen, yes, babies as young as 10 months old, 11 months old at baseball games. I've sat next to them. But let's say they're 5 or 6. I mean, that's when I was brought to games. That's where I fell in love with the sport.
Okay.
So why, when the solution is so easy as putting up a net, then what do you care? Like, I guess what I'm asking you is, why shouldn't people bring babies to the game?
Well, they could bring babies to the game, but taking care of a baby and watching the game,
yeah,
is probably very difficult for parents to do that.
Beth, that's a fair point. I don't know how the parents do anything with babies, first and foremost. You can bring them to the grocery store.
Why,
yeah,
you want to bring a baby,
yeah,
to the game.
No, yeah, that's a whole different argument. Beth,
get a babysitter.
Yeah, Beth, I'm with you on the baby thing. Don't worry. And you're right. Like, and again, yeah, some parents have talked about that they move seats and that they're in their way of the kids and they're able to block it. That's great. And you know what? 99 times out of 100, the parent is probably able to get in the way and nothing happens, right? Maybe 999 out of 1,000 times. But are we going to wait for that 1%, that 0.1% of a time where it strikes someone and they die? Is that worth it? Did not put up a net?
I agree.
All right.
I think everybody agrees.
But Beth, I would love to say that, and that is not the case. Some people are so pure with this game. We had someone we talked to on WGN in the news break saying that it's going to be like watching a cage. Beth, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Either way, yeah, babies at the game, that's a lot to deal with. Leo, you got a couple ideas here.
I do. I don't think, you know, you should restrict who you can and cannot bring to the game. Parents want to bring their family, they should be able to do it without fear. So I propose that keep the netting that's in current use now, but for the remainder of the field, they should be able to construct something that is more transparent, and the rest of the field, you would still be behind a netting, but maybe a different material that is strong, but not as strong as the material behind home plate. Or
okay, so like
a
weaker net that would at least slow it down or something, and then it
like
wouldn't be as
line.
Exactly.
Like
a bunch of fish, bat was, yeah, coming into the stands or a ball, just something that's there that's not as obstructing as the original material,
right.
Maybe like a nylon or something.
Yeah, I'll let the engineers figure out what they got to do. If they can deem it
sounds
safe
good
enough to slow it down. Leo, I like your idea. Leo's got a good idea there, but we have a 847 text says, people have been surviving baseball games for how long? Time to stop being protective of everyone all the time. Okay, well, they were surviving baseball games until at least last year when someone died from it. Someone almost died last night from it. Another Dodgers fan got hit last night and he's okay, thank goodness. But the balls are being hit harder now than they ever were before. They are going faster than they ever have before. And the players are getting bigger and they're getting stronger than they ever had before. Your game that you watched in the 50s and 60s, while a wonderful sport and a wonderful game, has nothing compared to the speed in which baseballs are flying around right now. Let's go to Jan. Jan, you're on WGN.
Hi. I'd just like to make a comment. I've never been to a game, but I bet you most of the people are looking at their phones rather than watching the game.
Jan, you're right. We're addicted to our phones now, and I'll be the first to admit it. I love baseball, and I'm checking stats. Even if I'm looking at my phone as it relates to the baseball game, I am checking. You're right. But, Jan, I will say, and you know, maybe you know, you've never been to a game. You should go, by the way. It's a great time, and 99.99% of the fans never get hit by balls. But, Jan, the ball moves so fast that, again, even if you were staring at the pitch and the ball the whole time, if you're that close, there's still a chance you're going to get hit.
Yeah. And the poor kid that got hit was sitting on his parents' lap.
Yeah. Exactly. And the parent, you know, maybe they did try and move. We didn't know. We didn't see that angle. Jan, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. 312-981-7200. A lot of opinions on this one. I think they say on the A47 they have a nylon net already. It's used in hockey rinks. The tech is there. Yeah, and if the tech isn't there, I don't think this is high enough tech that it couldn't be, you know. I'm sure they're doing the best they can to make nets that are as least obtrusive as possible. But feel free to join the conversation. I don't know if, I think most people, we'll do the news click in a bit, and we'll try and see exactly what percentages we're at here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock. We're just talking. I'm going to wrap up the segment here about putting up nets on the baseball fields, or at least down the foul lines. Albert Elmora Jr., the Cubbies, lined one into the stands last night in Houston, hit a little girl, and that girl sounds like is on the mend, but a really scary situation. And for me, it's a matter of it's so easy to put up nets. I don't see why. I haven't heard a good argument why not yet. I've heard people saying that it's their own responsibility. Fine, you can say that. Get off your phones. Okay, yeah, people should do that too. But when the solution is so easy, I don't understand why we aren't doing it. Someone that has some firsthand experience in this is Eddie. Eddie, you're on WGN.
Yeah, I do have some firsthand experience. It was pretty frightful.
Go ahead and share it.
Well, I was at the White Sox game back in September, early September last year, top of the ninth inning. We're sitting front row down the first baseline, and Jamer Candelario of the Tigers hooks a line drive. It's going 107 miles an hour off the bat. Based on the exit velocity, I was able to look up after. Just nails me right between the eyes.
Oh, like, my God.
Kill shot.
Yeah, Eddie, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you seem even shook up just talking about it. How could you not be?
Right. Yeah, I mean, as you stated, like, there's some sort of argument about, like, stay off your phones or whatever. But the point is, and the fact is, that when the ball is moving that fast, even if you're paying attention and limber, athletic, I play softball, you just can't defend yourself from a ball that's moving that fast. You don't have time.
Eddie, how are you doing now?
Well, so I had a badly broken nose, and it needed surgery. It took some time for that to recover, of course, but thank God it was confined to just the nose area. But if it had hit me like an inch higher, inch to the left, inch to the right, or in my mouth, I mean, we'd be dealing with a whole other world of trauma and of possible injuries. And I'm just really grateful that it didn't crack my skull and that I didn't have brain bleeding. I thought I was going to be having brain surgery that night.
That's the 13-year-old who passed away after getting hit by the hockey puck in Columbus. I think they checked her out in the hospital. I'm not exactly sure. But either way, she went home that night at some point, and she didn't die right away. She died from internal bleeding, which is what's so scary about this, which is why they rushed this young fan to the hospital, of course, to do all the tests. Eddie, and you were telling the story. I just want to make sure I got this across. You were paying attention.
Yeah, I was. I saw it coming right at me, and I thought, hey, I'm going to make a play on this thing. I'm going to make a great catch. But the thing is, with the ball moving that fast, by the time your brain processes the sight of the ball, it's already moved like 12 and a half, 13, 15 feet. So it's like, oh, you're like, oh, I'm going to catch it. But nope, it's actually hitting me in the face.
Eddie, thank God you are okay, all right?
Yeah.
Does it scare you from going to games anymore? Have you been back to a game yet this year? Does it make you rethink where you're going to sit?
I've been back to games, but I sure won't be sitting anywhere near those seats anymore.
Right.
I mean, I typically like to sit outfield or bleachers anyways. It was just because I was with a group of friends that we were and we're sitting down on the first baseline front row. But, I won't be sitting anywhere near those seats anymore.
I think I know the answer to the question, but go ahead and answer it. Would you be okay with, should they put the nets up all the way down to the foul line?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I think, for the most part, they should at least raise them to 10-foot level or 15-foot level. There's a certain, like, angle of a fly ball or a certain exit velocity of a fly ball in which fans would have a reasonable amount of time to react or catch a ball. But the thing is, when the ball's moving 105 miles an hour and it's moving, like, 160 feet only, you're going to get killed.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's a way of doing it that doesn't have to completely obstruct the view or limit the amount of souvenirs that go into the stands. And it's like they have the data. They have all this data in StatCast that they use in MLB these days. They know everything.
They know everything.
They know exactly how much danger the fans that are sitting in those seats are in. And, they should have netting that reflects the danger.
Yeah. Eddie, thank God you're okay, and thanks for calling. We really appreciate your perspective.
All right, thank you.
And go White Sox.
Sure.
I also had we had a text from 815. How about a retractable net that goes down between innings and when players are warming up and goes back when the pitcher takes them out? I don't hate that idea. People talk about being close to fans or fans being close to players. That might add some complications to it, but maybe then they can, you know, as they're done warming up, they can still flip the ball into the stands, go there for autographs. I don't know if it's possible. That seems like a good compromise. Bobby, you had something to say that I thought of too about Wrigley Field. Go ahead, Bobby.
Why can't we just repurpose the netting that we used to catch the concrete that was falling on everyone's heads before Wrigley Field got renovated?
And boy, they fixed that quickly after it happened. One little concrete fell, if you don't remember, oh God, 10, 15 years ago, onto the people underneath the concourse or the upper deck. And as soon as someone got hit in the head, Bobby, that netting went up the next day.
Yeah, and it was there for a couple seasons.
Yep, for sure. Bobby, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for hanging on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Go on, bye.
All right, so go to WGNRadio.com, go to the John Williams Facebook page for the news click, which I am going to read for you now. All right, protecting baseball fans, you get the final say here. Should MLB mandate that the netting goes all the way down to the foul poles? Yes, fan safety is most important. Yes, but maybe not all the way down to the foul pole, so maybe a little bit more, but not all the way. No, people should pay more attention. Or no, it ruins the fan experience. WGNRadio.com. You could search for the news click, and it'll appear on the page. Also on the John Williams Facebook page. Thanks for everyone joining the conversation. I know we disagree on some of this stuff, but it's important to have these discussions. After this, Patty Vasquez is going to join us down in Springfield on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, 144 on this Thursday afternoon. It's turning out to be a gorgeous Thursday afternoon across Chicago. Thank you so much for listening. John Hansen in for John Williams. All right, we're going to switch gears here away from baseball nets and talk to our good friend Patty Vasquez. Of course, you can check her out every single night here on WGN. Patty, how you doing?
I'm good, but if you thought that talking about netting the baselines was controversial, you're going to put me on the line to talk about marijuana, gambling, heroin needles, and women's reproductive health? This should be good.
Yeah, this is a grand slam. This is everything. And it's kind of unusual. Maybe it's not that unusual, but man, this is a lot of important legislation that is literally coming down to the wire, Patty.
It is, and I want to thank you. You and Ellis sent me a link to an article. You know, I was looking at the big ticket things that everyone's talking about, which are, of course, expanding gambling and the reproductive health legislation. But you guys sent me an article about clean heroin needle exchanges, and I wanted to tell you, I talked to a lot of people, and it was really interesting. This is what something they call a harm reduction bill. And one of the reasons that they're doing this is to protect the people who do provide clean needles to addicts. And they were telling me about the, you know, obviously we have an epidemic of overdoses. There's the transference of HIV. There's a lot of risk involved for people who are ill. And they want to treat this like an illness and protect the people who are helping them through the illness of addiction.
Yeah, I imagine for people that say, why the heck would you provide needles for someone that is using in intravenous drugs? You have to make the mental switch in your brain first that it is not that person's fault necessarily, that it is a disease. And when you look at it like that, I think it becomes crystal clear why you're doing it.
And they've also talked about the fact that, you know, often the person that is providing those needles is a point of contact, right? There's a human interaction when you are seeking out needles legally, and because they are addicted, and that's, you're right. You have to make that acceptance, and as hard as that is, you know, this is a way to, they're hoping to connect with people. And there's an increase. It's been proven by the CDC when you can provide a safe way for people to take care of themselves. And yes, it's part of the addiction. You also have an opportunity to help them into recovery as well.
Amen. Not to put you on the spot, but do we know where, like, is that in the House? Is that past the Senate? Where are we at with that?
That one has passed. That's going to the governor. It's passed the House and the Senate, and it's going to go to the governor's desk.
All right. Where are we at with weed?
With weed, that's got to go into the House. So that's passed out of the Senate. And it goes to the House next. They got three. It was bipartisan and not like overwhelmingly.
Right,
though,
right.
But there were three Republicans.
Hey-o.
Who crossed. Yeah,
we'll and call that bipartisan.
Senator,
yeah,
we'll take it.
In this day and age, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily kumbaya, but it's baya, maybe.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Senator Berrickman was talking about his community and that he thinks that it's time to move forward, and whether it's for the revenue or for the fact that, you know, to normalize something that is what people are doing. We know that people are using, and for a lot of people, the Black Caucus had a press conference today, and they were talking about the social justice aspect of this and how a lot of minorities have been targeted when it comes to the legal system. So it is going into the Senate, and it's expected to pass, and they think that there will be four or five Republicans who cross party lines.
Under the House. Yeah, it'll be in the House. And does that have to be done by when does the legislative session end? Is it tomorrow or is it tonight?
Tomorrow. Tomorrow at midnight. If they don't get everything done that they want, so if they go into summer session trying to get anything done that is still on the table, they'll need a supermajority. Yeah, they need a bigger majority of approval on anything that they want to get done, which is obviously why you want to get the budget and the capital spending bills done by tomorrow at midnight. But what it sounds like to me, and one representative who asked to not be quoted on the record, they said that they want them to vote on the gambling bill before they can get to the capital spending, which is your roads and infrastructure. The legislators said they want us to vote on a pile of crap so we can have our pile of diamonds.
I guess that's an amazing way to say that. I think what we're right. also driving at is they need to know how much anticipated revenue they're going to have before they can adjust accordingly for passing a budget. And that's why they've got to get some of these revenue enhancement bills out of the way, right?
Right. Well, the gambling expansion, which would expand casinos into places like Chicago and Rockford, it would be one landlocked in Chicago and I believe five riverboats around the state. They're expecting between that and expanding the sports betting, more tables at horse tracks, higher taxes on video gambling, things like that would bring in about $350 million is what they're hoping.
Here's what's fascinating. Here's what's fascinating about the gambling bill is it started as an online, or no, not online, but as a sports betting bill. This all traces back about 54 weeks to when the Supreme Court overruled an earlier case, outlawing it state by state, and now that they're able to do it. But I am amazed at how quickly this bill has risen to expand and to include a brick-and-mortar casino here in Chicago. You mentioned Rockford, a couple other places. My question is, Patty, just based on your expertise of Springfield and how it works... I was talking to some people, and they're like, oh, man, the bigger you make this bill, the easier it is to fail. But in my mind, I think this is a matter of, look, if you're going to get some people a piece of the pie, the more pie you can give out to everyone, the more likely it is to succeed.
Exactly. I think that because it does seem as though they're trying to make sure that places like Danville, Lake County, they are trying to hit different parts of the state so you can garner more support for it, right? If you can say, hey, we'll make a deal with you. I mean, that's what a lot of these bills are like. Someone explained it was kind of like, on your board in front of you, and I don't know if we can explain this to everybody else, but you have to, adjust. No matter how much you adjust, you throw something off, like whether it's the volume or, bringing in the news. If you're doing, music, every time you change something, something else sounds off.
Right.
So they have to find that balance where everyone's kind of happy and will say yes, or at least enough people will be.
What do you think prospects are of the gambling one? I think that the tide has turned. I know that the lead negotiator on it, one of the reps, dropped out, and that's never a good sign when your lead negotiator is no longer your lead negotiator. But most things that I've heard are pretty positive that this thing might get through, although there's still a little time.
Yeah, there's still a little time for it to go either way. And my sense is that, there's not a lot, there's not like excitement about it. I mean, anytime you're doing legislation that has, we have three or four bills that are about morality, right? And this is
right.
about your morals. Right. So, they have a lot to answer for in their districts and to themselves. So I think that's one of the things that comes into play on this one, too.
But, it's interesting. You mentioned that morality thing. And so often in Springfield, these debates often come down to Chicago versus downstate. And I think that if this bill comes up 5 years ago, you'd have a little bit more pearl clutching. I don't know how else to say that in a better way out of the central and southern parts of the state. People just morally against it. And I don't know whether it's the revenues and people are kind of getting big eyed on what that could do to the deficit, or if it's that sentiments have changed, or if it's that, look, if everyone's going to get a piece of this pie and this is the groundswell, this is the way it's going. But I don't see that much, at least on the gambling issue, I don't see a geographical breakdown in terms of our potential yays or nays.
I think so, too. And don't you think a lot of that has to do with online betting?
Yes.
The accessibility of it. And that, again, normalizes it and it makes it seem like something that everybody does.
Yeah. Patty, also got to talk about the reproductive rights bill that went through the Senate and I believe the House now. It's all done after an emotional floor debate. Obviously, look.
Oh, no, it hasn't gone through the Senate.
Okay,
you're right,
just
though.
The House.
Yes, just the House. So today is the day that they're thinking. Today or tomorrow, it will go to the Senate.
And boy, what a contentious thing. For those of you, for those of those folks out there that don't quite know what's happening, because obviously, look, abortion's on top of everyone's mind with what's happening in Georgia, Missouri, and I don't know, a handful of other states. What is this bill? What is the aim and the crux of this bill?
It's to really establish the existing laws that we have in Illinois, but also to protect women who are seeking health care from the possibility of Roe v. Wade when it is, if it is overturned. I mean, a lot of people expect now more than ever that it might be. There's a possibility. In the 70s, after Roe v. Wade was passed, the state of Illinois passed legislation basically anticipating the possibility of Roe v. Wade being overturned. So they rushed to put in, you know, basically once that happened, it would become illegal in the state of Illinois. So what they are doing now in the House and the Senate is to have things remain the way they have been since Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't expand anything. It doesn't change anything. It protects the existing accessibility to women's health.
Okay. So we'll wait for that passage in the Senate. Patty, what else brings you down there? I know we didn't list about four causes. But, you know, that's the thing. When these big-ticket items get talked about and debated and take this much time to get through, you know, there's a lot of other causes that are fighting for different pieces of this smaller and smaller pie in Springfield.
Right. Well, and you know, that's the thing, is that there are a lot of programs and services. People always talk about, like, you know, we need to cut first. And what people don't realize is that a lot of services did go away. A lot of providers closed shop because of our budget impasse over the last few years. So, you know, that's not necessarily the option. And a lot of programs that have suffered in the years, like we talked to the president and CEO of ChildServe. Sorry, there's a field trip coming through the stairwell that I was in.
That's okay. That's fine. You want to put it on the air. Yeah.
How you doing? Hi, everybody. Just on WGN Radio. Hi, everybody. That's all right. They're on. It's okay. It's
they're
okay.
Like, what's radio?
They're all shushing. Yeah, they're like, what's radio? Yeah. Tune in 7:20 a.m. You guys will all be on tonight. yes. So there are programs like ChildServe that want to make sure that they're not left behind. And that's one of the things that's so important about passing the budget, the capital spending bill. You know, we all want to make sure that our economy is going strongly and that we have jobs. We also want to make sure that the commitment we have to those that are most vulnerable, people, you know, that are relying on services in their communities are also protected. So you've got groups here today that are just reminding people, look, you know, things need to get done. And it's impressive. I mean, I hope that people come to Springfield. I love coming to Springfield. Have you been, John?
Oh, many times, but I definitely know you like going down there. You must. Do you take Amtrak? Do you drive? You must have some frequent sort of trip thing saved up.
Well, I hope my mom isn't listening, but I decided to leave right after my show last night.
Oh, got through the middle of the night. Okay.
And I, you know what? I realize on the way here is that driving in the rain makes me really sleepy.
Oh, so. And that Interstate 55, you pass through a lot of, you don't make many turns of the wheel there.
No, and so I finally had to give in and pulled over to a rest area and slept in my car.
Oh, Patty,
don't tell my mom.
No, I won't tell your mom, but you told, Patty, do we need to send you some, do I need to talk to Todd about getting a raise over here? We need to get you into a hotel.
But I was only going to be in the hotel for a couple hours. It didn't seem worth it.
I know. I understand. Yeah. Hey, Patty, do you mind if we take a call? We got a question for you, actually.
Please.
All right. Sure. Patty, from one Pat to another Pat, what's your question here on WGN?
Hi, Patty. How are you? My question is, what do you think the chances are of Chicago legalizing video gaming in lieu of the fact that there's tens of thousands of sweepstakes machines out there which are not controlled by anybody?
That's a great question.
And that's something. It is. I agree. I mean, and that's something that has come up, is that, you know, the promises that were made about those video gambling in the sweepstakes were supposed to generate all this money for the state, and that hasn't been the case. And the problem is, when you say you're going to expand the video gambling into Chicago, you're like, well, you're not holding the last bill accountable. And that's something that I think is a problem here in Springfield, you know?
Yeah.
They talk about transparency and, you know, we're going to make sure we track how well this is doing, only now you're moving on to more legislation and you didn't make sure the last bill was doing what it was doing.
Right. Pat, thanks for the phone call. Patty, your sense on this thing, politicians are humans too, and they want to go into the summer. They want to break on this thing. They want to go they want to go home. They want to see their kids. They want to see their family. I can't blame them for it. Are we going to have a nice bow on this thing by the end of tomorrow night? Or are there going to be, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some lingering issues into the summer session, but are we going to get a budget out of this thing?
Well, you know, if there's something interesting that happened in a hallway. There's another element that seemed to have popped up about McCormick Place and the expansion of an area where they're taxing, you know, Chicagoans for McCormick Place. And I'm not sure. That just happened as I was trying to learn about the Clean Needle Program.
Mayor Lightfoot kind of put a kibosh on it because it extended it out, I think, 10 miles, but exempted major arenas like Wrigley Field and Guaranteed Rate Field. And so she didn't like that.
Yeah. Right, and there's some reps here who are saying that, you know, they don't want that either because, you know, it has a negative impact on a lot of small businesses. So I don't know that that's going to be a hiccup for anything else, but that's the only thing I've heard so far that could, you know, be something that distracts from the conversation about all the bills that they want to. Basically, they're calling it the planes that they have to land, which are marijuana, gambling, reproductive rights, the capital spending bill, and the budget.
So you got to get the dirt before the diamonds. That's what you said, right, Pat?
Crap before the diamonds.
Very good.
You didn't want to say it. It's okay. Yeah. I'll lower the bar.
Yeah. I was going to say you do every night, but that was really mean, and I didn't mean to say that, of course.
No, Patty, I don't mind.
So you're on tonight, though, right, of course, after the White Sox?
I'll be broadcasting from the basement of the Capitol, and we will have Senator Toy Hutchinson on, who is the sponsor of the legalizing recreational cannabis in the state of Illinois.
All right. Patty Vasquez, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day, John.
And no rest stops on the way back, girl. I will Venmo you some money to get a cheap hotel in Peoria if I need to, all right?
It was going to be, I think, Pontiac. I should have stopped in Pontiac.
Yeah, Pontiac. That's
I was
a
like,
good
I can
stuff.
Make it. I can make it.
Maybe Dwight. They've got some cheap rates. All right,
bye, Patty. They've got a nice hotel in Towanda.
Towanda. There you go.
Funks Grove. I should have stopped in Funks Grove. That was my fault.
312-91-7200. Can you house Patty tonight or tomorrow when she makes her way back? Let us know. If you're on Interstate 55, even better. More after this on 720 WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Mm-mm. 720 WGN. John Hanson in for John Williams on this, turned out to be a gorgeous Thursday afternoon. Didn't start that way. Seen some really cool videos over the last couple days of the fog descending over downtown Chicago. None of that right now. Looks pretty out there. The boats on the river. Everyone seems happy as they make their way around the area. Still a little cool near the lakefront, but all in all, not too bad. Love for you to join the conversation, 312-981-7200, talk or text. And it's John Hanson filling in for John Williams. I don't know if I said that or not, but up until 3 o'clock. And then Justin Kaufman is in for Roe, and of course, Anna DeVlante is still here. Steve Bertrand, I wanted to have you chime in on something, but it's something I didn't warn you about ahead of time, so feel free to bow out at any point.
Love when that happens.
Yeah, right? It's not the baseball net thing. We had a chance to kind of talk about that. So people can join this conversation, too. We're going to do a little game show and give away some pizza. So if that's something you want, some Lou Malnati's pizza, 312-981-7200. Talking about surveys about parents getting their kids ready for school. And I am not a parent yet, hopefully one day. Steve, remind everyone how many beautiful children you have.
I have two beautiful children, one living in L.A. and the other senior in college.
So you don't have to get them ready for school anymore. But I imagine, so you went through that or at some point at least, or your wife did, about getting kids ready for school. So I was just going to take a couple questions here for you. So how many percent of adult men say that they at least in the last 3 months have shaved on their way to work because their kids wasted all their time in the morning?
38%.
52%.
Wow.
Well, how do they do that with the cream,
all,
right?
You got to be equipped with you got to use an electric razor, first of all.
Right.
So that's going to limit the population.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anyone foaming up on the TVs.
Exactly. Well, maybe if traffic's that bad, I could see it, but I wouldn't put a straight razor, especially now with the razors where there's like six on one of them.
No, yeah, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, that's not going to go so well. 43% of women put on their makeup. I think that's low. I think it's higher than that, just on personal experience driving in. And this is the question I'm going to ask, 312-981-7200, so don't answer this one, but I'm going to get three people to try and guess. Whoever's closest wins a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate, Lou Malnati's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. We've got a couple callers in. We're looking for one more contestant. Okay, in an average school week, kids spill on their clothes how many times while getting ready for the day ahead? So you got 5 days.
So this is just in the morning.
In an average, yes, getting ready to go to school.
Wow. You want me to answer?
Yeah, how many?
Oh, I'll say three.
Two times a week. Is it that prevalent? Maybe it's because I'm not a parent. I have no idea about any of this.
First of all, I would say, who cares? Just wear it anyway.
Right, exactly.
What is it, milk, orange juice?
Yeah, it doesn't say that they made the kid change at that point. Right. It just says that they spill on themselves at that point in time. What percentage of parents resort to bribing their kids to keep going quicker, to get ready?
72.
Yeah, it's right around there. It's around 70%. 39% offer more time with electronics. 38% say you're going to have a new toy or game. Or 33% say you get to watch more TV as your reward. How many breakfasts do parents skip every week because their kids make them late? So out of five breakfasts, how many are the parents skipping because they're trying to get their kids ready?
I'll say three. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Elf.
I was going to say three as well.
Yeah, it's two, but three seems about right. And they say 8 in 10 parents think breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but only 3 out of 5 breakfasts are actually done. Okay, we got our contestants here on 720 for this all-important question. I got Linda. Linda, you're on line one. How you doing, Linda?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Linda, do you have any kids?
Yes, I do.
And were they a pain in the butt to get ready in the morning?
Very hard, very hard. They were not a morning person, okay. Not at all.
All right, and we've also got Gloria. Gloria, you're on WGN. How you doing, Gloria?
Doing well, thank you.
All right, and you got any kids, Gloria?
No, lots of nieces and nephews, so
all right,
banking
so
on that.
There you go, that's fine, and let's go to Keith. Keith, you're on WGN. How you doing, Keith?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Any kids?
Yes, I do.
How many?
One.
All right, one. All right, so we got Linda, we got Gloria and Keith, and this is for a $25 gift certificate to Lou Malnati's. All right, so think of a school year. It's 9 months long, right? Or about 9 months long. Parents will have asked their kids the two words, hurry up. How many times in a school year, on average, do parents ask their kids to hurry up? Linda, first guest goes to you.
God, I would say... There's 270 days of trying to think of the day.
Wow. Wow, you know that really, really good, Linda. Okay. Very good.
Okay. 200.
200. Linda says 200. Gloria, how many times do parents say hurry up to their kids in one school year?
I'd say about 189.
Just about 189 on the dot. Okay. That ain't a just about, Gloria. Is that what you do for your nieces and nephews? Did you count on a couple hands there trying to figure it out? Or at least talk to your brothers and sisters?
Exactly.
All right, Keith, Keith, what's your guess? How many times in a school year will a parent say hurry up to their kids?
Every day of the school year.
So if there was 270, is that your guess?
Yeah.
And Linda, yours was 240, right? That was your guess?
200.
200, okay. So we got 200, 189, 270. You guys are all kind of in the same range. And let me just say the answer is well out of the ballpark. But our winner is Keith with 270 because the answer is 540 times on average in a school year, your parents will tell kids to get ready. I imagine you believe, Linda, you believe that or?
I totally believe it. I was just thinking 270 because I was weekends. I couldn't count that because you couldn't save for school. So that's why I went with the 200,
yeah.
Thinking every day for school. But it's obviously more than one time a day.
Oh yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you're doing it all the time.
I'm doing all the math problem here.
Gloria and Keith and Linda, thank you guys so much for playing. Keith, make sure you stay on the line because, again, you are going to win the Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. I am excited to figure out one day exactly how many times I tell my kids to get ready. I can imagine them with I have nieces and nephews, too. Oh, boy, it takes a lot of time. 720 WGN, and a happy Thursday afternoon to you. John Hansen in for John Williams until 3 o'clock, and then it will be Justin Kaufman in for Rokan and Anna DeVlantes. Just one last wrap-up of getting kids ready in the morning. 847 says, my parents would tell me twice, and then I would get grounded, and I'd never be late again. Sure.
The sound of footsteps going up the stairs still haunts me to this day because I knew it was my parents coming to wake me up. It's like a weird PTSD thing. I get like I get a chill in my body when I hear it.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. It's I would always know how quick to get ready based on how heavy the footsteps were. If they were a little light, and it's not what you think. If there was a heavy footstep, that was Dad coming up the stairs. And he wasn't as much the disciplinarian. I love both my parents, of course. My dad would knock on the door and say, let's go, let's go. I think he felt for me.
I always got the light switch just flipped up.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But if I heard lighter taps, that was my mom. Or, you know, when she went back to work, and if I heard the heels coming upstairs, that was go time. That was, you better get out the bed at that time. 312-91-7200. Hey, we had a little hole in the show, and not many people are able to just walk into the hallway and see the great Walter Jacobson sitting there. Walter, thanks for just hanging around, being ready to go. You're in the bullpen.
Well, I love to talk about this stuff, and it's great to hear you give me a chance.
It's always great to chat with you, Walter. And boy, we saw something.
Oh, boy.
In the city council. I mean, you covered this thing for how many years, and did you ever think you'd see something? And we're talking about the Ed Burke versus Lori Lightfoot spat.
Never. I'm trying to remember how many years, but I think it's been 40 years that I've been going to those city council meetings.
Uh-huh.
And never have I seen anything like what happened yesterday with Ed Burke. He was humiliated. He was destroyed. Lori Lightfoot had a great time making mincemeat out of him. It was almost sad,
yeah.
You know?
Ed Burke has been known to go on long diatribes at city council to use the floor at his advantage, sometimes for on-issue topics that he feels deeply about.
Right.
Sometimes he meanders towards certain points, and boy, it looked like he was starting down some road, and he didn't get very far.
Boy, he sure didn't, you know. He tried to do it in his normal way, which is quietly and softly,
mm-hmm.
and thoughtfully talk about something like flaws in the rules of the city council.
He was talking about gender pronouns.
That's
actually,
right.
Which is an interesting thing that he would be bringing up to Mayor Lightfoot, who is a stereotypical bending mayor in that.
And she called him on that, too. He said that Miss Lightfoot, Mayor Lightfoot, Madam, he called her, please, you've got to understand that some of these rules you're changing are flawed in the way you're changing them. Simply, you're referring to members of the city council all as men. And that's not fair, he said, because they are men and women. Well, she just took off after him on that. And as you just said, she said in no uncertain terms, and you know what? Picture her. This little kind of a pipsqueak of a person and so tough inside. And she told him that he was making a lot of nonsense and he should stop it. And she's not going to put up with him in the city council doing this. And you could just see him kind of crumble. Poor guy.
Federally indicted, or at least investigated a poor guy.
If you've been around long enough,
yeah.
People that you don't really like or respect a lot, like Ed Burke in his bad times, and there are others in politics and government and mm-hmm. business that we've been critical of, and when you've been watching them for so long, you get to kind of know them more on the inside,
yeah.
And then you do, there is a little feeling. I have a little feeling, though I've picked on Ed Burke for many times, many years, but I kind of felt bad for him.
Yeah.
And you know what? Say one more thing.
Yeah, of course. Walter, you can say as many things as you want. We got time, baby.
You got me talking, so I'm going to talk.
You just Lori Lightfooted me. I'm Ed Burke. You're Lori Lightfoot. There you go.
Oh, God. Listen, Ed Burke, if you're going to tell me that you think you're worried about gender problems in the city council, that you're a laughing stock, and I'm not even going to listen to that.
Yeah.
And he started to stop, and he said, okay. And she said, now may we go on with our business here? Are you finished playing around? And then when it was all over, she went into the back room and talked to reporters and went all over him again. Let me just read one sentence that she said that really stuck out for me.
Mm-hmm.
Alderman Burke is somebody who likes to test people. He likes to see if there are weaknesses, and he has attempted to do this in the past with me, and he's failed spectacularly every time, and every time he tries it, he will again fail spectacularly. I'm not going to start off my term as mayor with the city council putting up with somebody who's playing games for the sport of it. You know, if it weren't for Ed Burke, Lori Lightfoot would not be mayor.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up.
Yeah.
She was certainly an also-ran candidate until Alderman Ed Burke fell under scrutiny.
That's right. What do you... She really took off on him during the campaign and used that all the way to victory. An incredible victory. You know, every single ward,
right.
She won 73% of the vote. She's on her way, man, I'll tell you.
She must have, I mean, she had to have been prepared for that moment. I mean, she was quick. She was quick and ready. I have a little, she did a little exchange with him, I'll read. Alderman Burke, you've been in city council for approximately 50 years. Is that correct? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And you're a lawyer. Is that also correct? Yes, you are. You're aware that under the terms of the law, and particularly as provided in the municipal code, that gender, whether it's designated as his or her, applies with equal force. So if you're making an objection, please make it so we can move forward. She was ready for that.
Yeah, let it not be said that we're trying to pick on Ed Burke.
No.
Now, he's in a bad place right now. And
never kick a man when he's down.
Yeah, that's right. And he has been very positive in many ways in that city council. And just think of what he's given as a gift to us in the media. There's always something to talk about.
So you must be, you and I talked before she took the oath of office a couple weeks ago, Walter. And I've got to say, you know, we think of the city council as this powerful body, and certainly they have the power to be that. Under the Mayor Daley's, they were no more than a signing away. They would do whatever the mayors wanted them to do. And a lot of the discussion going into Mayor Lightfoot's term was, you know, she's taking on the aldermen. She wants to do away with aldermanic privilege. She's going to stand up to them. Man, she's gotten everything she's wanted so far. Is it her strength? Is it her uprising as a mayor that came out of nowhere, or is this just a little grace period?
I think it has something to do with the image of being strong and tough at her size. It has to do with this being a year of change in politics. It began with the midterm elections in Washington, around the country, to send people to Washington, and she fit in perfectly for that, and she's... We don't understand her. We want to hear what she can do. She's a prosecutor, 30 years in the law business, and she is going to make lots of news out of City Hall. And that, of course, is what keeps us working. The thing she did yesterday, beside the way she just destroyed Ed Burke, was naming three more committees, and then she can name three more chairmen of the committees. So now there will be 18 committees in the city council instead of just 15, and each one of those next three will add to her majority in getting through her agenda.
Scott,
she's in good shape.
Scott Walker's back takes over for the finance committee, and you got Tom Tunney in charge of the zoning committee. I think the important thing with all that is she got who she wanted.
Absolutely.
How important is that for a mayor, from an administrative perspective, to have the people under you be the people that you want?
It's hugely important, especially in this city government, where most of the power comes from the mayor's office, and now it can be spread out with her leadership in the city council's office as well. She had, when she named those committeemen that she wants to be, and last night she didn't, or yesterday she didn't even have to call for a voice vote, because they just shouted,
mm-hmm.
Yes, all those opposed, no, but there were three opposition voices, but she's taken care of them too. You know, Tony Beal, the alderman who says that Lori Lightfoot is running over people and shouldn't be taking away some of the privileges that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
She just put them all to rest.
Yeah. We actually had a texter in, Walter. It's interesting. This person wants to know, please ask Walter Jacobson, if Alderman Burke was correct, though, in his assertion that the rules should be correctly written as gender neutral. That's interesting. That got shot down as, piffy, let's not talk about it. Does that?
He wasn't correct, because the law says that whether you say he or she, they have the same amount of strength and influence.
Should we call them aldermen and alderwomen, though?
Well,
it is straight. It is, so every time I say aldermen, referring to a woman, whether it was Deb Mellon, I'd go up to her and I'd say, Alderman Mel, you kind of, it's a struggle, because now we're so politically correct, and maybe that's a sign of great progress moving forward. Should we call them older women at this point?
No, we're so tuned into this cultural advancement,
uh-huh,
that we are afraid, uncomfortable. I am to say alderman when it's an older woman.
Right.
So listen, it's no big deal. Say older woman. She is an older woman.
Right. That's what I say. I guess what it should mean, and in the grander scheme of things, who cares? just say whatever you got to say. The issues are more important. All right, so as we look forward here, and I know you got to get back to work, Walter, but as we look forward, obviously she's got a lot on her plate. She's trying to tackle a lot of things. So did Harold Washington. So did Jane Byrne, two mayors that buck trends as well. First African-American mayor, first woman mayor back in the 80s, or 70s and 80s, excuse me. They fell short sometimes in taking on city council.
Of course.
And I think you get a grace period as a mayor to maybe get your slate in of committee men and committee women you want. Do you see Lori Lightfoot having the lasting power? Does she have the electorate behind her in such a strength that she is a little bit of a, she can raise her shoulders a little higher and plow her agenda forward a little bit more than they could?
I think, and it's hard for me to say specifically, of course, because you never know what's going on in the minds of people all over the city. Mm-hmm. And we in the news business sometimes tend to make generalities that are unfair. So I don't want to sound like I know what they're all thinking,
right,
of course, but I think it's pretty clear that people are fascinated by this woman and want to know what she's doing and want change. That's why they voted for her. And now the media is standing right behind her, the Tribune and the Sun-Times, in strong headlines. The headlines this morning after yesterday's meeting were Burke beaten down, Lori bests Burke, early victory for reform. I mean, she's riding a wave.
Yeah.
She's got to be careful,
yep.
You know, because the media likes nothing better than to build somebody up and then tear them down.
You better believe it, exactly. 312 probably summed it up best. Burke went into a sword fight armed with a butter knife. Mayor Lightfoot.
Listen, you know, one more point on that. Alderman Burke was out of character. He did two really not smart things. I don't want to say dumb, but dumb things.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Burke should know better than to say things on the telephone that might be recorded.
Right.
And Ed Burke should know better than to walk into the city council and take on a 30-year prosecutor and challenge her wording in the rules of the council.
And it doesn't matter how tall she is.
It's not like him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
And like you said last time, it doesn't matter that she's 5'1". She's as tough as nails. Yeah. Walter, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I love coming in.
And you can always catch Walter Jacobson's perspectives all the time here on WGN Radio. WGN 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. To me, the governor thing, it's like when you write a check over and over again, or you write the date 2018. It takes forever for me to be able to adjust to the new year. Same with the governor's names, but it happens.
I would take that if it was Lightfoot and the mayor, but it's been long enough for the governor.
I was trying to cover for you, Steve.
Well, I appreciate that.
I was trying to give you the benefit of the doubt.
You know what's worse is I wrote Rounder.
So it wasn't even just off the...
No.
That's okay. It happens. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, and you said 82 degrees. You're forgiven. Come on. By the end of the newscast, you redeemed yourself, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Let's shift gears. This story just coming out from Block Club Chicago a couple hours ago. I love Block Club Chicago. If you remember DNA Info, they tell the best neighborhood stories. These are the same people with Block Club Chicago, now a nonprofit news organization. Subscribe. Do whatever you can. Go to blockclubchicago.org. And one of my favorite people is reporter Mina Bloom. She covers the Logan Square neighborhood and some of the other communities right around there. Mina, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
Mina, you're a frequent guest of mine because you always have the quirkiest stories and the funniest stories. And while this isn't particularly funny, it is in a way because, look, we've got a leaking Blue Line station due to water. And look, we've had a lot of water in May, the rainiest month, rainiest May in history, I believe Steve was reporting on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Leaking water is going to happen. But this brand new Belmont Blue Line station has a brand new canopy, I should say. What was it supposed to look like, Mina?
So the architect, it's Carol Ross Barney. She's known for designing the Chicago Riverwalk. She actually designed it to look like a big blue waterfall. That was the way she wanted it to look. And so, as I pointed out in my story, now we actually have a literal waterfall happening.
Yes. And how much water are we talking about? This isn't a trickle, but this is coming down pretty steady?
Well, you know, it's hard to say exactly how much water is coming down. But as you can see from the photos, I mean, the water is coming from a lot of different places throughout the canopy. It's not just in one place.
I mean, this thing cost $17 million. And I get it. Look, we've had a real rainy May. But, I mean, it wasn't designed to do this.
Yeah, you know, the CCA, they said that, you know, that this is not uncommon for recently constructed structures such as this. You know, they of course apologized for the inconvenience. But they know that the work is covered by warranty and it'll be, you know, it'll be fixed as quickly as possible, but, you know, at no cost to the CTA, you know, no cost to the city. So they did say all of that. But of course, you know, to have a canopy installed just a few months ago and to have it leak, you know, it is a problem. The canopy's literal one job is to shield people from the elements, and it's not doing that.
I think you're tempting fate by trying to make it look like a waterfall.
You could say that, yeah.
So has this just been kind of posted all throughout the neighborhood, the photos and the irony, the ironic tweets? I imagine they're running up a storm, especially in a neighborhood like Logan Square, which might be have the most ironic people in the neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, people are definitely posting the story a lot. I think the fact that it was made to look like a waterfall and now there's literal water coming, you know, falling down is kind of, like you said, sort of a funny thing. So people are talking about it, yes, a lot on social media. But really, you know, it is a problem because, you know, we want our city infrastructure to work. And we, you know, as a city, we did spend a lot of money on this renovation project.
Mina, I didn't tell you we were going to do this, but I'd love for you to plug for why people should donate, subscribe, or whatever they can do to the Block Club Chicago family.
Oh, my gosh. Well, John, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to do that. I think that Block Club Chicago is putting out the best neighborhood news stories in the city. I thought that DNA Info was doing that as well. We're a lot of the same people from DNA Info. We find the stories that no one else is covering, such as this leaking canopy in Avondale. So if you care about your neighborhood, if you care about the things happening down your block, you really want to subscribe to Block Club because we are embedded in the neighborhoods. We know the neighborhoods really well. I've lived in the neighborhood for a really long time. I think that we're putting out really important work that no one else is putting out.
Yeah, you know, and you hit it right on the head. I mean, neighborhood reporters that are able to go to local school council meetings, neighborhood reporters that are able to actually walk the streets sometimes to find their stories, it's kind of like the old model that used to have, you know, the small-town newspaper, but you got a bunch of them and you got them all over the city.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, we always say Chicago is a city of neighborhoods, and each neighborhood kind of feels like its own small town. And, you know, that was sort of the premise that we built DNA Info on, and it really worked. It really worked well there, and it's working here at Block Club. We're finding those stories because we're showing up to those local school council meetings, those local policing meetings. We're finding those stories that actually matter to you, the person that lives, you know, in your neighborhood and cares about your neighborhood.
And I got to say, you know, sometimes these small neighborhood stories might seem to only impact those in the neighborhood. But, man, like you said, yes, this is about one blue line stop. But this is really a story about infrastructure and how we spend money. There's stories,
exactly,
that are quirky about a little neighborhood, but we all can relate because we're all still Chicagoans. You guys do a wonderful job. Mina, keep it up, okay?
Thank you so much, John.
All right. Also, had a text from Marilyn from the 312. Love Block Club Chicago. So do I. Again, go to blockclubchicago.org for more information. Quick break, and then I got to recap. What a day in sports it was yesterday, especially in the baseball world. We got the net thing down pretty good. It was me versus a lot of people on the net situation, although we'll have to check in on the news click to see where we're up with our updated question and the results therein. But Kevin Powell is going to join us after the break. I want to talk about what happened in the Sox game yesterday, too, on 720 WGN. You know, in baseball, how you get to play every day, and one day you go 0 for 5 with 5 strikeouts, but the good thing is the next day you get to come and try and prove yourself. Yesterday, I think I messed up every single live read, but no more than the one that I'm about to read to you. So here's my redemption. Here we go. Hopefully no stumbles. Okay. You've heard about the HomeSnap app that John Williams has been talking about. Well, HomeSnap has the most up-to-date real estate info direct from the MLS, and it's free. It does the coolest thing. You can take a picture of a house for sale, or not, and get the buying history immediately. Then save it, send it to family, or chat with your agent right from the app. It's the exact same information realtors use. Visit WGNradio.com/HomeSnap to see it in action. Download it and get HomeSnap.app. Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. That was a home run.
That was your bump.
Oh, that was no music? You're like, yeah, you just get applause. That's it.
Percussion.
Percussion. Exactly. Yeah. Everyone always forgets. I was a percussionist for many years. I didn't play the drum. I didn't get the cool part of percussion, though. I played the mallets. So I wasn't really in the marching band because I didn't march. I was in the pit orchestra. Pit part of the march. I was in the marching band, but I didn't march.
That's
I just
so cool.
I thought it was fun. I love playing mallets. And I played timpani. Really, I really gave it my all when I played the timpani. But I didn't play like drum set. I can kind of do it, and I've got some rhythm. But at least the percussionists are cool that they played the drums. But that wasn't me. I digress. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams for another 15 minutes or so. We got Justin Kaufman and Anna DeFlantes coming on up, and going to be joined a little bit right now by K-Pow. Kevin Powell, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing outstanding. How are you, John?
Good. Had to bring you in two really strange games.
Yeah.
One on the South Side last night, and of course what happened in Houston. The news click today, I don't. You probably didn't hear me because you were on your way in, Kevin, but... For me, I don't get what the wait is. I think it's a no-brainer to put nets down to the foul poles and not to wait till the offseason. Just do it now. How hard is it to put up a net?
I'd be fine with that. I mean, look, there's if for anybody who's making the argument that it's going to distract from the game or it takes away from the viewing experience, do you see a lot of empty seats right along behind the dugout, John? Do you see a lot of empty seats right behind home plate?
No. Well, sometimes, but that's because it's rainy.
Yes, because it's rainy, it's cold,
yes,
and
exactly.
Spring's been miserable in Chicago.
Right, right.
But for the most part, you get my point, that those are still sought-after seats. If you look at the price point of those seats, they are the highest always. To me, I would be just fine with it, John. I don't think... look, baseball has bigger problems when it comes to attendance than... a net going down to the foul pole line and keeping fan. You think a fan is going to say, I'm not going to the game.
Yeah,
there's
right.
A net in front of me.
Right.
Okay. I think it's come to a point. Look, this happened 2 years ago. Todd Frazier, unfortunately, had this very similar situation. His foul ball caught a young child right in the face, and was, you know, the child was rushed to the hospital. A fan at Wrigley just a couple years ago was blinded in one eye after getting hit. And look, for people making the argument that, well, see, this is what cell phones does to the game.
Right.
Okay. A couple things here. One, you could be staring at this game, locked in, dialed in, and you're in the seats, right? And the ball could be hit. You could blink, and by the time your eyelids open, that ball is on you.
Yeah,
that's how fast these balls are coming over. Are 100 miles per hour off the bat, 110, 115 miles per hour off the bat. They're hitting the ball harder than they ever have before. I think that plays a role into it.
Yeah.
And look, even if you're dialed into the game, you just turn around for 1 second to say, hey, beer man, and next thing you know, you turn back to your right to look at the field.
Speaking of beer man, what about protecting them, too?
That's true. That's
you know,
a great
like,
point.
I mean, they're walking around, they're distracted doing their darn jobs.
It's true. I mean, look, I just think that some people immediately go to, well, you should be watching the game. You shouldn't bring childs down, you know, to those areas of the ballpark. I guess you could make a case for that, but I don't think that's the
listening to our callers and texters earlier.
That's not the large. Yeah. Well, I just go on Twitter last night.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate, very scary moment down in Houston. It was, you know, I was at Sox in the press box, and we're watching all this drama unfold with Tim Anderson and the Royals again, and then we look up to the TV where the Cubs game is on, and play has stopped. It almost happened at the same exact time, and we weren't sure. It was like, did somebody, you know, was there an altercation between the Astros and Cubs, and then you realize what happened, you're like, oh my God, not again.
Ugh.
Not again. So
yeah, we actually, Kevin, we had a caller call in that was hit between the eyes at a White Sox game a couple years ago. Or maybe, I think he said it was last September.
I remember that it was a foul ball. I was at that game. We looked down.
Eddie was his name. He called,
and he was bleeding a lot. We could see it, dude. It was, right? Is that? I'm
he broke his nose, and he said he called, and he went back later and watched on Statcast, and it was 107 mile an hour exit velocity.
I remember that moment. We were looking straight down from the press box down the first base line, and we saw this guy just walking out with a bloody rag over his face.
It's so scary.
I mean, it is scary. And look, even if you're a diehard baseball fan and you are locked into 99% of the pitches, which almost nobody is, because when you go to a ballpark, you're with a friend and you're talking, you're chatting, and you're ordering popcorn and hot dogs and beer. It doesn't mean you're buried and glued into your phone. It's just the reality of where we're at. I mean,
Even if you're a baseball player with a glove, they miss 107 mile an hour balls going past them.
I mean, even the players in the dugout aren't watching every single pitch. I'm sure they miss one or two throughout the period of a game.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Horrible what happened. And to answer your question, I would be just fine with adding the nets all the way down the
football. I think I knew what your answer was going to be there. Yeah. I got to say, it was it was a real human moment for Albert El Moro Jr.
Yeah.
And it was, I wasn't watching it live, but when I kind of saw on Twitter what was going on, I tuned in and I saw out of the break him hugging the security guard and him shaking from, you could tell he was sobbing. And I started to tear up. It was, it's an emotional thing to watch. So hopefully, and fingers crossed, it looks like everything's going to be okay. But, you know, the last point I'll make on this, and I brought this up earlier, was just the hockey thing. The poor 13-year-old who was killed in the Columbus Blue Jackets game in 2002, that led to the netting all the way up, even past the second deck over the goals, because he was in the second deck when that happened, and no one says a word about it now, the netting at hockey games. No one brings it up. No one cares. Anyways, the other thing I wanted to talk about, what I really brought you on for, because you were seeing this in person, the Tim Anderson situation and the quick hook, throwing Glenn Sparkman out of the game. You agree with the hook?
Well, it's look, the home plate umpire after the game said that he had obviously was aware of what happened between the Sox and Royals. And for anybody who missed it, Tim Anderson, who is becoming a borderline star in this league.
Oh, yeah. He's so, as a Cubs fan, I love watching that guy. He's awesome.
He's fun to watch, man. And he's performing, too. Like, you can't say some of the things he says or do some of the things he says unless you're playing well. And he has been playing well all year. So the gist of the story is, earlier in the year, he hit a home run in the middle of the game, and he did a sort of a bat flip towards his own team's dugout, not even at the Royals' dugout. Next at bat, Brad Keller pegs him. Things get chippy. Anderson got a game suspension. I think Keller had to miss a start, all those sorts of things. So last night, the second inning, a ball caught Anderson in the tip, the brim of his helmet, and the home plate umpire had the early hook on Glenn Sparkman and threw him out of the game.
There were no warnings issued or they issued before the game or nothing?
They said nothing. No, okay. They said nothing. Look, I think that the Royals sort of did this to themselves with the way they acted earlier in the year, so... Look, for the home plate umpire, do I think Glenn Sparkman, not a single person after the game, manager, coach, player, thought that Glenn Sparkman was actually throwing at Tim Anderson.
It appeared to be a changeup,
It appeared to be a changeup. Slipped out of, look, this is a guy who's trying to make a big league rotation. This is like his second career start. So, I get why the umpire had the early hook. I mean, he may have overacted a pinch and just kind of initially thought, okay, this is Tim Anderson. This is the Royals. This is the Sox. You're out of here, Sparkman.
Right.
Tim Anderson, after the game, said, look, I don't think he was throwing at me on purpose, but I do think he should have got thrown out. And I guess the point he was making is it's because of what the Royals did earlier in the year.
Make your own bed with this stuff.
So I was, honestly, I almost feel bad for Glenn Sparkman, but I do kind of see where the home plate umpire was coming from with the early hook. But it's definitely one of those things that's going to cause even more debate in the baseball world between the old world of baseball and the new world of baseball, because that's where it kind of went with the Tim Anderson story earlier in the year, where Anderson was this fun player. He's exciting. He's a guy the Sox can market. Look, I turn on MLB Network, and Tim Anderson's always being talked about. There haven't been a ton of Sox players over the past few years who have been front and center on the national baseball media landscape. So he's one of those guys that I think you can market throughout baseball, not just in Chicago. So I don't think they were necessarily even protecting Anderson. It's just he just seems to find himself in the middle of all this drama the past couple of years.
And I think the ejection was a good way to say, this is it.
Like, we're done. And he was nipping in the butt. He's like, I'm not dealing with this the rest of the game.
Because if he doesn't get ejected, I have no idea what Ricky Renteria's views on this. I imagine he is not at all for throwing at guys. But you never know who talks to who. You certainly don't want the White Sox retaliating in any of these situations. And not to say that they would, but if you don't stop it there and send a clear signal, then, you might see some escalations in the heat of the moment, even not necessarily on thrown balls, but, you know, slides into second. We've seen overrun, even that when the Rangers and the Blue Jays kind of had their rivalry going, and the bat flip by Batista, and then that stemmed from the earlier hard slide into second. I mean, like, and when you're out there competing and you're running as fast as you are and you're that close, if you don't nip these things in the bud, they have a tendency to boil over pretty quickly.
I'm with you.
It's must-watch baseball, though, I will say, or much-listen baseball, of course.
You know, we asked Tim Anderson after the game kind of about the whole thing, and look, the Royals are in last place. I'm not going to go as far as call this a rivalry, but it's a thing now all of a sudden, and they meet again a week from Friday. I'm not necessarily saying we're going to see any more fireworks, especially the way now we've seen umpires react when it comes to this series. But look, Sox-Royals, I can't wait to see them play again next week. Tim Anderson straight up came out yesterday. He goes, I don't like them.
Yeah.
I don't like the Royals. I want to whoop them every time we play them.
That's good stuff. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for chiming
in. You got it. Thanks, John.
By the way, the 309 asked, the White Sox greatly expanded their netting. Did the Astros not do that? Every team had to do to the dugouts, right?
Yeah, to the end of the dugouts. That was mandatory at the start of last year, following that, as I mentioned, the Todd Frazier liner that caught a young child a couple years ago. Baseball said, all right, we're done. You have to go all the way to the end of the dugout. And I wouldn't be all that surprised if either at some point this year or next year, all the way to the foul poles.
Yeah, I just think they do that in Japan. And just for me, and I know people are probably like, we know, John. We know
this
how
is
you
America,
feel.
Damn it.
I know, but
we don't need those Japanese nets, John.
if the solution wasn't...
I'm just saying, you're going to hear that probably from somebody.
It's already coming in. If the solution wasn't so easy, then I could see maybe you make an argument. But since it is so easy, what the heck are we talking about here? And my worry is just you wait to the end of the year and then this happens and someone dies. It happened at Dodger Stadium last year to a 79-year-old grandmother. It's going to happen again. God forbid anything like that happens. But, oh, man, we got to get this done. All right, K-Pal, for real this time. Thanks so much. We'll wrap things up next on 720 WGN. Reminder, go to the news click and vote on the baseball nets. Safety is important, and that's what we should put the Nets foul pole to foul pole, or if you want them to go part of the way, or no, you feel like people should pay more attention, or if it ruins your fan experience. Also, we would talk to, and I know that Justin and Anna, you guys talked to the Mount Everest climber yesterday. That's what we kind of made our news click on yesterday about he was raising money and made it through his week at Mount Everest. And our news click question overwhelmingly said, that's great for him, not for me. No way I would make that climb. 4% said, inspiring. Maybe I'll try it someday. 26% people shouldn't risk their lives, even for a good cause. And 0%, maybe our first 0% on a news click question, I'm already planning my climb.
Yeah. You know, let me just throw out that what Alex told us yesterday. It takes about $60,000 to make the climb.
$100,000.
That's the luxury level. If you want
extra
oxygen.
If you want a tent with a pillow, then you're paying $100,000.
Then you're paying $100,000. So put that into account as well, that you're going to need six figures.
Right. Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Kim Gordon. Guys, what do you got coming up today?
Well, we're going to talk to Ben Bradley and about what's coming up on WGN TV News. He's got some interesting things to say. Alderman Riley joins us. A lot going on in City Council. You saw that fiery exchange between Burke and the new mayor and what that means moving forward for council, what we should expect, plus the new restaurant tax. The mayor has just weighed in on that. It looked like it was moving through, maybe not so quickly now.
Yeah, I live in Wrigleyville. That's not cool, by the way.
All the way to Irving Park.
No.
Think about it. And the 55th Street on the south. These are broad parameters, boundaries for
these
this kind of attack.
These are neighborhood places. I get there's tourists there, but I live there.
Yeah, and you don't want it in your neighborhood.
No.
You're a NIMBY, not in my neighborhood. I get it.
When it comes to taxes, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, have a good show, guys.
Thank you.